Welcome to the C-Suite podcast that we are recording at Shop Talk here at the Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas. My name is Russell Goldsmith, and together with Graham Barrett, we'll be interviewing a number of the speakers and attendees here at the event.
We're producing this episode in partnership with Bread Financial, a tech-forward financial services company providing simple, personalised payment lending and saving solutions. Really hope you enjoy the show. I'm now here with Jessica Calloway. She's Senior Manager, Thought Leadership and Consumer Insights at Bread Financial. Jessie, lovely to see you.
Thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit more about your role to start with. So what does that entail, Thought Leadership?
So at Bread Financial, I lead our Thought Leadership and Consumer Insights team. We do hundreds of studies of consumers through the year. Our job is to keep a constant pulse on what's happening with American shoppers today. So it's an opportunity for me to take a look at consumers, see how they're thinking, behaving, how they're engaging with retail. So it's a really interesting role.
And this new report is called The State of the Middle Class Shopper, isn't it? So
yes.
Tell me why the middle classes in particular interest you.
So we're releasing this new report here at Shop Talk today. It's actually built off of a report we released in October. We were looking at the state of the American shopper, and we saw just incredible resiliency in the American consumer. Despite some of those macroeconomic challenges that we hear about today, those higher interest rates and ongoing inflation, people are still spending. And it turns out that a lot of that resiliency, it's really built from the middle class.
Okay.
And that middle class, it's half of all American consumers. So they are quite the force to be reckoned with.
So tell me a little bit more about these spending habits then. What are they spending? How are they spending? Tell me a bit more.
The middle class is absolutely weighing their wants and their needs. And so looking at those trade-offs is something that we looked at in the report. I expected to see a real doom and gloom story because when you watch a lot of news, they're only telling you the bad parts, right? But that's not what's happening out there. I couldn't have been more mistaken in walking in with that mindset. The middle class, 80% of them say they are personally on the right track financially. Another 80% of them are feeling very secure in their jobs. And so we see that they are having no trouble with their meeting their essentials, getting those basics, that gas, those groceries. Sure, they're making trade-offs, but they're meeting their basic needs. And they're still spending on the discretionary side as well. So we see 71% of the middle class bought a restaurant meal in the last 2 weeks. You tend to see more food at home, for example, when you've got less money in your pocket. Mm. So that discretionary spending is absolutely still happening.
What about aspirations? Well, I mean, we hear a lot about the American dream, don't we? What does the American dream mean to the middle class shopper?
The American dream, it was a really interesting topic, right? And so when we think about the classic American dream, it was home ownership.
Mm.
And you used to hear a lot about, you know, maybe a white picket fence and, you know, the beautiful house and the beautiful family,
Yeah. Everything
that goes along with that. And so with those higher interest rates and higher home prices, we wondered if the younger consumer still thought of that classic American dream as being home ownership. So we looked at that a little bit. And it turns out that across all income groups and across all generations, home ownership is still the pinnacle of the American dream.
Wow.
Really surprised us.
Mm.
But I think the thing that really concerned me, though, when I looked at that data, we asked about a ton of facets that could be associated with the American dream. Maybe it's owning your own business or having affordable health care or going on vacation when you want.
Mm.
And we found that 91% of Gen Z felt like a piece of the American dream was unattainable for them.
Wow. Yeah.
That's less than half of baby boomers felt the same way.
Yeah.
So we have a risk. You know, we could be leaving these younger generations behind. And we definitely, that's something I think that we, as part of the retail industry and the financing industry, we really need to look out for that.
Mm. Well, let's talk a little bit about that then. How do the attitudes change between the baby boomer generation and these generations coming through now? And as you just said, what are the implications for retailers? How do they need to communicate with these people?
What I think really stood out and consistently stands out is that baby boomers tend to have a more pessimistic view of the economy and the world around them compared to those younger consumers like Gen Z and millennials.
Mm.
We see that Gen Z and millennials, they are still very much engaged in retail, but they also have higher expectations and they're pushing retailers to do more, whether it's digital channels or it's in-store services. It's the younger generations that want more compared to those baby boomers. So I think it's really those younger generations that are going to continue to push the industry ahead.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So As you said, thought leadership at Bread Financial is what you do, and this is just one of a series of reports, isn't it? Do you hope to continue to release reports like this and find out more about shopping habits?
Actually, if you go to breadfinancial.com, you can see all of the reports my team has released. We release about 185 actually wow. different studies through the year, so there's quite a library of material that's available out there. I encourage everybody to go check us out online, and maybe you'll learn something new too.
That's my evening reading sorted for the next few weeks, I think. So, Jessica Calloway, thanks so much for joining me here today at Shop Talk.
Thank you for having me.
Pleased to say that Joe Laszlo, the Vice President of Content here at Shop Talk, is joining me now. Nice to see you.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Shop Talk, but specifically around the content, because that's what you do. So you book the speakers, is that right, under the fabulous lineup you've got here at Shop Talk this year. How do you do that? How do you go through that process and select the right people?
Yeah, it's a long process. Pretty much the week after one Shop Talk wraps up, we start thinking about the agenda for the next show. I think one of the things that makes Shop Talk different is we do take an agenda-first approach. Mm-hmm. So we think about the topics, the big themes, the big transformational moments that are going to be happening in retail that our audience needs to know. And then we put an agenda together from that, and then we end up with this spreadsheet with a whole bunch of empty boxes in it, and it's about finding the right people, the right executives from across the industry to fill those boxes. Mm-hmm. It would be kind of easier, perhaps, to get speakers first and then kind of build an agenda based on the speakers that we get. But we think about things like balance, because Shop Talk represents all of retail. You're on a given panel conversation, we'd like to have one startup-y D2C company and one well-established legacy brand and one somewhere in the middle, and different retail verticals represented as well. So yeah, at the start, it's always very easy, but as you get to those last few spots on the agenda, it's like a game of Sudoku. You can't figure out what's the right number to fit in those last few boxes.
Yeah. Well, what are some of those topics and big themes then? If that's how you start the agenda, what were the themes that you were looking at for this year's event?
Right. So for this year, Shop Talk would not be a retail innovation conference if we didn't have artificial intelligence front and center on the agenda. Everybody wants to talk about AI. The track sessions that we programmed on AI yesterday were very, very full. So I'd say AI is front and center. Shop Talk has for a while been talking about omnichannel, although we're trying to reposition it, rename it as unified commerce, because it's not really just about, you know, getting your e-com business working well and your physical retail business working well, and they're two separate lines of business. It's about everything blurs these days as far as how shoppers shop. And so unifying retail, both in terms of customer facing, but also in terms of the way organizations structure themselves, is a big second topic, I would say. Third, we're talking a lot this year about brands and brand building. I think this has been an interesting moment where a bunch of legacy brands, you know, Stanley, the thermos company, having its amazing moment. Barbie too, Mattel, who has been around for many, many decades now, yeah. Kind of having just a cultural moment last year that any brand would be envious of. So kind of how are brands, and especially older brands, kind of creating those moments, cultivating them? I'd say those are three big things. And if I was going to name one last one, it would be just how relationships in the industry are changing. The rise of retail media suddenly makes every retailer under the sun have a product that they want to sell to manufacturers, to brands. Okay. And it's really upending relationships in a lot of very interesting ways.
That's great. It's funny you mentioned Barbie, actually, because I did a walk around the expo yesterday, and yeah, nearly every stand had something related to Barbie, whether it was Barbie Monopoly I saw, or I saw Barbie dolls, I saw the Ken jacket. So yeah, that's clearly a big theme throughout the whole thing.
Yeah, having the two presidents, the president of Mattel Films and the president and chief commercial officer of Mattel proper on stage yesterday, just kind of talking not so much about that as about what do they do next? How do you take that success and learn from it and apply it to some of the other iconic toys that happen to be in Mattel's portfolio?
Yeah. Any other speakers that you were particularly happy to get on board, or any other highlights from the sessions? Obviously, you mentioned Mattel. Any others?
Sure. It's hard, right? It's kind of like picking your favorite kid in a way, like who's your favorite speaker, or what's your favorite session. But but you know, I was really, really happy that we got the brand new CEO of Macy's Incorporated. He spoke on Sunday, the opening day of the show. Mm-hmm. Really kind of providing more detail on the hard choices that a company like Macy's, an iconic department store chain, needs to make if it's going to stay relevant. Again, coming back to that branding and customer journey question, what do they do online as well as in their stores?
Yeah, what do you see as the key talking points this year then?
Sure. I guess there's a few things that have emerged, you know, along the lines of the four big themes I talked about earlier, you know, around AI. I think it's excitement about what AI can do, but also a little bit of trepidation, a little bit of concern. I think there's already strong awareness that, you know, if AI runs outside of strictly set guardrails, it can do terrible things for a company or brand or a customer. I think there is all of these questions of, again, what do these changing industry relationships mean? You know, I'm old enough that I remember when it was a neat kind of division of labor between manufacturers and retailers, yep, and ad agencies and media companies, and everybody kind of played in their lane, and consumers as well. And now, like, a consumer can be a creator and totally market a brand, and a brand can totally be a retailer by going direct to the consumer, working through marketplaces, and everybody does a little bit of everything. And I think it makes for a much more complicated world than that neat, tidy, everybody in their lane world that we used to live in. But it's really exciting too for the people that can adapt to it.
Yeah, and just finish off by talking about Zeitgeist that you mentioned to me. Tell me a little bit more about that.
So one of the things that I like the most about my job is it is about finding the right speakers to share their expertise with our audience. But as ShopDoc has evolved over the years, we've developed our own expertise as well. And the Zeitgeist is a moment on our main stage at each of our conferences where ShopDoc shares that perspective with the audience. So it's our 20 minutes to say, you know, that for this moment in retail, at this moment in time, these are the biggest things that you need to be thinking about, need to take back to your companies and really have a plan for. And the one thing we know for certain is it's going to be different next year because everything changes.
Yeah, well, that'd be fascinating to come back next year and find out what the talking points are next year. So Joe Laszlo, good luck with that. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
I'm here now with Andrea Moore, the Chief Digital Officer at Nest New York. Andrea, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very well. Really good to see you. Now, you spoke on a panel, didn't you, here at Shop Talk, which I understand went down a storm. All about keeping pace with new consumer behaviors.
Yes.
Tell me a bit about the session. What are these new behaviors?
You know, it's interesting because I also, you know, we're consumers, and so it's interesting to think about how we market to consumers, being a consumer as well. It was really about, you know, how do you keep pace in an omnichannel world where your products are sold in many outlets, whether it's your own stores, whether it's wholesale, and so stores from other brands. We talked a lot about emerging technologies like composable commerce, and we talked about mobile and social media. I mean, I think the biggest thing about keeping pace with consumers is you have to know where your particular consumer is on the adoption trend. Mm-hmm. Like, some brands are very leading edge. They might market to a lot younger customers. Some brands are more later adopters. And so you have to really look at the trends in the market, whether it's AI or TikTok shops or whatever, and adapt it to your particular consumer.
Yeah.
That's the magic.
AI, TikTok shop. I've heard those two phrases a lot here at Shop Talk. Yeah. So how do you do this at Nest then? How do you stay ahead of the curve?
Yeah. So at Nest, Nest New York is a fragrance company, and we're very widely distributed in places like Sephora and Ulta, department stores, Amazon. And, you know, we really test a lot of things. I would not say that Nest consumer is on the very edge of things. Mm-hmm. And so we have the opportunity to learn about what's happening in the market. And maybe take more calculated risks. Mm-hmm. Some of the things we're always looking to differentiate channel by channel because, again, we're so widely distributed. So what we do on Amazon might not be the same as what we do on our own website. Mm-hmm. But we've tried things like live selling. We've tried things like concierge services for our consumers. We do special VIP promotions for people who are on our SMS list. Like, we're always looking for ways to distinguish the experience.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the different channels there. How do you prioritize those channels? How do you decide which ones are going to work for you at any given time?
Well, it's like saying which child is your favorite.
Yeah.
I mean, every channel is important in a different way. Mm. There's a reason for being in all of those channels because it's a different consumer. Mm. If you just take Amazon, for example, we do a lot of business in replenishment product and core product, where people have already seen and understood and used the product and then come back to buy it on Amazon for all the efficiencies they get there. And
right.
So we lean into building up, building equity around our core brand products, like a key, like a scent, like Bamboo, which has been the number one scent for over 15 years. We lean into that and really drive that, as opposed to like driving newness, where we would lead with newness in a channel like Sephora, where that consumer wants the newest thing first. And in part, it's really about being in partnership with a company like Sephora.
Yeah.
So,
So the kind of content then is very bespoke according to which channel you're on. What does that look like?
The assortment. A lot of times we really look at the timing of the launch and the product assortment channel by channel. Mm-hmm. We do create unique content sometimes channel by channel. Like we have a core set of content and then we create unique things, whether it's marketing programs, influencer content, et cetera.
Another thing we've been talking about here at Shop Talk is how to market, how to communicate with Gen Z.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that and how that is different from the baby boomer generation, let's say?
Yeah. I'm in an interesting perspective because I'm Gen X, that generation no one really cares about. And it's been very interesting to see the differences between the millennial group and the Gen Z group. Mm-hmm. I think the big thing that I notice is that there's not a lot of channel loyalty. There can be product loyalty. It seems to me the product cycles are much quicker. Mm-hmm. Things tend to come and go much more quickly. And so it's really, how do you adapt your supply chain for that? How do you adapt your innovation cycle for that? There's a lot to think about when you are thinking about things in a shorter kind of soundbite kind of moment.
Sure.
I mean, TikTok's like a 6-second event, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So
yeah.
What can you tell someone in 6 seconds?
Yeah. So yeah, you've got to be really laser focused on the messaging in that piece of content. Absolutely. Well, finish up just talking to me about the customer experience as a whole then at Nest. I mean, just talked about Gen Z, but how do you build that customer experience?
The most important thing is starting with products that resonate with consumers. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of home fragrance, but also fine fragrance, which is very unique and specific because what you wear on your body is very personal, especially in fragrance. So we do market research. We look at the trends in the market. We look at who the demographics of our consumer base are and where the white space is, not only demographically, but geographically. And so we kind of are using that as a starting point, and then we're leaning into the things that are working already in our assortment and adding more. So for example, and also we learn what people like. Like if someone likes citrus scents, then we know we can really approach selling them the next citrus scent, right? Okay. So it's like there are things that you learn sort of about people's, what interests them from a product perspective.
Yeah. Is that exciting as well to launch new products? Are you quite nimble in terms of that, in terms of developing and launching products?
I don't know. Nimble is it's a high bar to live up to.
Yeah, yeah.
I think we tend to be iterative, mm-hmm. which I think is important. I think we need to learn what works. And I think the most important part about assessing if something is working is trying to be as factual as possible, mm-hmm. and taking some of the emotion out of it. It's very easy to get attached to products that you work on.
Yeah.
And you have to really have the ability to step back and say, this worked. It's great. Let's do more of it. Or this really missed the mark. Why and how do we move it forward?
Yeah.
You have to be a little ruthless on that side of things.
Yeah, it's more a considered approach. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely. Okay, well, that's great. Andrew Moore, thanks so much for joining me today. Enjoy the rest of the show.
Thank you. You too.
So I'm now joined by Melissa Hark, the chief and founder of Wild Dough. Melissa, thanks so much for joining us.
So excited to be here.
Now, let's hear your origin story, as we like to say. How did you come to launch Wild Dough? Why did you launch Wild Dough?
Yeah, so Wild Dough we're a Play-Doh company. So we make a really soft, long-lasting Play-Doh all the way back in Australia. How it came about is I'm a mum and I had two kids at the time. I just had my second child and I had a toddler there that just loved Play-Doh. My second child was a little bit much more hard work, I'm gonna say, than my first was. And he just would never get out of my arms. So I felt like I just didn't have arms to hang out and play with my toddler. And so when I was giving her dough to actually entertain her, it was just drying out all the time. It was always too tough for her to actually manipulate herself. And it was drying out. Every time I reached for it, it was never there. And one of the days I threw my arms in the air and just went, there must be a better way than this. So funnily enough, there wasn't a better way out there at the time that I could buy. I searched high and low, so I thought I'm gonna create it myself. So I went to create a Play-Doh that was really soft, something that young children can easily manipulate in their hands independently. They didn't need a parent to intervene when they played. And as well as I wanted another Play-Doh that was really long lasting, it was always going to be there. It could sit out on the bench all day while the kids played with it. And as well, if it did, you know, sit out for 3 days, because kids do these things, you know, it could actually last. And so ours is rehydratable, so it's left out for ages, a few drops of water and you can rehydrate it. So it's basically, it's built for kids, you know, no nasties, food grade, all the great things about a dough, smells great. But in my mind, it's all about the parents. So it just helped my family so much when once I had created this What Is Wild Dough Today, that I decided I'd start selling it to help out other mums there as well. Everyone needs a space of time in the day to have a hot cuppa, and that's actually what it felt like it did for me.
That's great. So can you share that secret formula? How have you managed to achieve it? I'm guessing you're going to not be able to tell us.
Hey, look, we like to keep the actual formula of Wild Dough under lock and key. I will admit. However, you know, it is...
You're up there with, like, Coke and KFC, aren't you?
Look, we're totally pretending. We absolutely are. You know, Coca-Cola, look out. But, you know, the thing about it is that we use household ingredients. We use ingredients that probably most people have in their pantries at home. So it's a little bit about the mix of ingredients, but it's a lot about the way we make it. So it's really just been defined as this, like, the, you know, once you feel wild dough, it's got this cloud-like texture, and you really don't want to go back to any other type out there.
So where are you at the moment in terms of sales? How's it all going?
Yeah, so we've been around for 5 years. We're an Australian brand. We've completely blown up at home, essentially. So we've got over 300,000 happy customers. We've won awards all over the world. We've had a really amazing ride, actually. And then apart from that, this year, our big focus is actually expansion into the US. So we've got blinkers on straight to the US. It's because it's all made in Australia. Export to there is much easier for us than export all the way over to Europe, etc. So we're starting with that market. I'm looking forward to getting it into more hands. We have got a big market over here who are wanting it. So I'm really looking forward to getting it into everyone's hands.
Well, how are you going to deal then with the challenge of, if you know, the increase that you're selling so quickly, and then if you're, you know, expanding internationally, that challenge of the speed of manufacture and then distribution, how are you going to handle all that?
Great question. It is our biggest challenge. Right. So if you think that, Wild Dough was, you know, a mum-built brand, literally it was me on my kitchen bench with two kids on my hips, you know, handmade at home. We've scaled up. So as we have been expanding, we've had to scale production. So it's a process that we haven't been able to go out and have somebody else make it for me. Unfortunately, that would make my life so much easier. So we've had to build production as we go. So, you know, it's a story where we expanded from kitchen bench to garage to first warehouse to second warehouse. We're now in a much, much bigger one. You know, we have got a team of 10 now, and we've been able to scale up to about, we can do maybe about 12,000 units a week in terms of our output. So that's something that we are continually scaling, and we certainly are living in a world where we can't really supply for demand, but, you know, we can supply a whole lot more now than what we could 2 years ago, put it that way. So to put it in perspective, this is a really cool number. In one day, a day's make, we can do 2.7 ton of wild dough, essentially. Okay. I mean, it takes time then to package it and everything else, but in terms of the make, I mean, that's crazy.
And you said, you know, looking to expand into the US. So you are selling into the US at the moment.
Yeah, so we've been in the US for about a year now. So we've set up direct. We've got our direct store happening here. We warehouse in Texas. We actually exhibited at the New York Toy Fair late last year. So we're here hunting some big partnerships. We're certainly here looking for, you know, the independents as well. We just want to make sure Wild Dough can be available everywhere for everybody. So
that's great. Well, listen, I wish you the best of luck with all that. Before we let you go, obviously your background is as a CMO, so there's a few questions we've been asking some of our other guests. One question I want to ask you is, I'd just love to get your thoughts in terms of how brands market to the younger generation now.
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, because just recently I saw a stat in Australia, which essentially says 73% of the 18 to 24 year old market, they have no qualms about just quickly hitting unsubscribe when they receive too many emails or SMSs. So how are we marketing to the younger generation? Like, obviously social media is blowing up, getting directly to them, but on that other side of things, thinking more operationally in how we traditionally have been, you know, running email marketing campaigns and SMS campaigns and getting in front of them that way, we really have to hit the brakes with that younger group. Yes, we can completely be all over social media, like everywhere in that sense, they're happy to receive it. But in terms of actually emails and SMS, we need a different strategy for the younger generation. Otherwise, they're just going to unsubscribe straight out of there.
Great. Well, listen, thank you for that, sharing your thoughts on that. And also, as I said, good luck with everything you're doing at Wild Dough. But for now, Melissa Hart, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So I'm now joined by Nikki Mendonca, the Global Managing Director, Software and Platform Practice at Accenture. Nikki, thank you so much for taking some time to chat to us. You spoke on a session here at Shop Talk around consumer shopping and spending habits. What are the trends that you're seeing?
Well, I actually talked about the everything economy, which is Accenture's terminology for an AI-powered multi-service lifestyle subscription model. So I know that's a bit of a mouthful, but that's exactly what's happening to the subscription economy.
Okay.
What it is we're moving away from a traditionally vertically siloed subscription economy to a much more horizontal battleground, where a lot of those traditionally vertical siloed subscriptions like food, media and entertainment, retail, banking, pharmacy, telecommunications are now being horizontally packaged up and almost algorithmically curated for the consumers to kind of satisfy their insatiable appetite for an on-demand, want-it-now kind of economy.
Now, this is all leading to the whole topic around super apps, isn't it?
It is.
Because I actually spoke to your colleague, Laura McCracken, a couple of years ago at Money 2020.
Fantastic.
And that was a kind of like favorite topic of hers. What's been the update around the super apps environment over that time, and why is there such a high demand for that?
Well, it's really interesting, and Laura and I have actually spoken about this quite a bit. The super app trend from Asia is sort of coming over to North America, but kind of in a different sort of guise. With players like X, I mean, they've got huge ambitions to be the everything app, and they are going to create a multi-service sort of lifestyle offering across all of their services, you know, social video, TV, peer-to-peer payments, and the list goes on, you know, spaces, communities, threads, etc. So we're definitely seeing that trend coming over to North America. It's just that different players will tackle it differently. We also think that in the lead, I mean, some of our Accenture research has shown us that in the lead of offering a multi-service subscription, we have players like Apple and Amazon and Uber and Netflix who are really sort of primed to offer a multi-service subscription. So that's very interesting.
What about the brands in this instance then? How are they going to evolve and improve their customer experiences?
I think brands really have to better understand consumers. And even yesterday we talked very much about the new sort of the Cambrian explosion of technology and wearables that are allowing us to actually do better consumer habit signaling and signal garnering and almost get better telemetry on what consumers are doing and how they're feeling. And all of that data we can now garner quite successfully to really get very forensic about what to deliver the consumer, understand their needs and desires and wants and preferences almost on a minute-by-minute basis. So I think it's very interesting for brands.
Do you think there's going to be a difference in the way that they're marketing to, obviously you've got the older generation, but the younger generation that are very aware of all these apps and technologies? What's your thoughts on that?
Oh, absolutely. And I think not only that, I think that the younger generation are also expressing an appetite for more, dare I say it, neuromarketing and neuroscience, and we'll go into a whole new field of sentient marketing and advertising, which will be very, very interesting, which goes into a whole world of brain-computer interfaces. And you can even see now with the work that Meta's doing in terms of neural interfaces and connecting brain signals to wrist actions. I mean, that whole world is going to literally be second nature to Gen Z and Gen Alpha.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. Final question for you, Nikki. Something that we've been talking about a lot on the podcast and here at Shop Talk, AI. What's the impact, you know, in terms of what you're doing at Accenture and the work and the clients that you work with?
Oh, we are doing so much. And of course, because I'm a leader in the software and platforms practice, AI, and more specifically generative AI, is integrated into everything we're doing. I mean, it's utterly game changing. Gen AI is literally going to be transformational technology, particularly as well because it better handles unstructured data, so emails and calls and video. And what we're seeing, particularly at Accenture, is the unleashing of a whole new market of creativity as we go into, you know, text to video. And you can see, you know, Accenture are leveraging all the technology that's out there, and specifically with our partnerships, NVIDIA to name one. And we feel that the text-to-video market is just absolutely exploding at the moment.
That's great. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing all your thoughts. But for now, Nikki Mendonca, thanks for joining the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I'm here with Kendra Bracken-Ferguson, the founder and CEO of Braintrust. Kendra, how you doing?
I am fantastic, Graham. Thanks so much for having me.
Nah, not at all. And obviously, we're here at Shop Talk. I'd be really keen to hear about your session, which I understand is around commerce on social media. So talk to me about engagement on those platforms.
Oh my gosh. First of all, I have to say that I love Shop Talk.
Okay.
I am like a Shop Talk groupie. I am here every year. I make the best connections. I had to figure out how to navigate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've always come as a speaker, which has been phenomenal. So I am doing a panel, Succeeding with Social Commerce and Content.
Nice.
And it's really talking about the evolution of social commerce. You know, when we think about retail, when we think about technology, this is the future. And we also combine that with content creators. And so it's just powerful.
Yeah.
So what we're really going to be diving into is how you can use social commerce from a B2B perspective, which is important, but then what does it look like from B2C? And how as a brand can you really leverage it to engage with your consumers? But then for all the content creators in the audience, how can you also use social commerce to engage your viewers and your own audience?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's always about engagement, isn't it? So, well, how'd you do that then? What are the keys to successful customer engagement?
So it always starts with the customer.
Mm-hmm.
Who is your consumer? What does the data say? I work with so many founders and companies.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about founders is that they're creating products based upon what they need and their wants and their desires. But the first step is really about who are your consumers? What does the data show? And then you can go from there to engage them. It's also about having dynamic content. So we're in this weird UGC meets branded content and who's going to win. And it's really a mix of both, depending upon your consumer, what they want, and then depending upon the platform that they want.
Mm-hmm.
And so we always like to look at what's the consumer, what's the content, and then what's the platform? Which platform is going to deliver what we need?
Okay. And tell me about Braintrust. I intro'd you there at the start. What's the idea behind Braintrust?
So it's funny because I started the first iteration of Braintrust in 2015.
Okay.
It was the second company that I started. So after building my first company, raising money, and before that going through corporate, I was literally sitting in my office and I was like, what have I learned? I've had a successful company. I rose the corporate ladder. I've raised money. And it was, I love smart people, love being around smart people. And I also only want to work with people I trust.
Mm-hmm.
I learned a lot, and it became, how can you work with people who are going to do what they say and say what they do?
Right.
And so I wrote on my whiteboard, Braintrust. And so the company started as social media, influencer marketing, brand development, all the things I love.
Mm-hmm.
And we've added Braintrust Founders Studio, which is the largest membership-based platform for Black founders in beauty and wellness. And we have our Braintrust Fund, which is a $15 million traditional venture fund that further invest.
Wow.
So I've been able to take this notion of community, mentorship, education, and capital and really put it into my business.
That is awesome. Now, you're speaking here. You're very busy here. You're taking your time at Shop Talk, but you're also on a book tour as well, aren't you? So just to add something else into the mix, show me.
Oh my gosh, Graham. So this is my new book, The Beauty of Success.
Okay.
Start, Grow, and Accelerate Your Brand. And it's so exciting because I also, like you, Graham, I host a podcast.
Ah, a rival podcast.
I know. we're more like brother and sister podcast.
Cool, that's fine.
So it's called Business of the Beat, and it focuses on BIPOC leaders who are starting, growing, accelerating, exiting their businesses. So my publisher was listening to my podcast and was like, this is a great book. So we launched February 13th, and it talks about my story as an entrepreneur, also an entrepreneur, and then brings in 18 stories from guests from my podcast.
Hey, look at that.
Who are sharing stories and tips. And so, yes, we are on the Beauty of Success Books Plus Bubbles book tour, a 20
great
plus
name.
Stop book
Love
tour.
The name.
Thank you. So original. So original.
Brilliant. Well, let's put that down there. That's awesome. And so what was the motivation behind writing the book and what do you hope it will achieve?
So for me, being someone who had this desire to, you know, climb the corporate ladder, and really I was on this path of building, and then I had the opportunity to become an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. And I sold my company, and then I went back to being an entrepreneur, then I went back to being an entrepreneur. And throughout all of it, I learned some really key things. I learned that it takes a brain trust. You can't do anything on your own, whether you're in a company or whether you're an entrepreneur. I also learned that you have to claim your non-negotiables. What are you willing to tolerate? How do you want to treat people, and how should they treat you? Mm-hmm. I also learned that we have to know when to pivot to really survive and thrive. Yep. And then at the end of the day, this journey we're on can truly be greater than we ever imagine. And so throughout the book, I have different prompts. How do you even determine your pillars and your foundation? Mm-hmm. And then also this notion of seize the day. You know, okay. We have to be ready for opportunities as they come.
Yeah. Wow. So where's this tour going? Are you going to go international with this?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, Graham, I'm coming international with you.
Yeah.
We're going overseas, but it's been such a great journey. And more than that, you know, everyone that I meet who reads the book, we're all sharing this journey together, and yeah. We're all encouraging and inspiring each other. And so I hope that someone can pick up the book and say, you know what, I'm going to pivot today because I'm going to thrive tomorrow. And I'm also going to learn all of the things that I need to be successful in my career.
Sure, and I'm sure that feedback is great, isn't it? When you go on the tour, people have read the book, you know, it must be great to get that kind of instant feedback.
And, yes, you know, and social media.
Makes it all, and social media. Makes it all worthwhile. Well, Kendra Bracken Ferguson, it's been brilliant having you on the show. Thanks for talking about your book, and we'll see you soon.
Thank you so much, Graham.
So I'm now joined by Matt Dornfield, the Senior Director and Head of Global Partnerships at Feedonomics. Matt, thank you so much for stopping by.
Yeah, pleasure.
Should we start with you just giving a quick intro to the company and also kind of where your role sits within it?
Absolutely, yeah. So Feedonomics is a data feed management platform for enterprise brands and retailers. And what we basically do is help those same retailers take their product catalogs and send them to the ads and marketplace channels that they want to perform and succeed on. So we do that with clients all around the world. And as you can imagine, with the evolution that we see often in e-commerce, there's always more channels. So yeah. we've got our hands full for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I'm going to come back to you on that. You're part of the BigCommerce team. How does that all work?
Yeah, great question. So BigCommerce is an enterprise e-commerce platform, and it actually acquired Feedonomics back in mid-2021. So Feedonomics operates completely independently and serves brands and retailers across other platforms like Salesforce Commerce Cloud, Shopify, Magento, and beyond. So very closely related because BigCommerce owns Feedonomics, but completely separate teams and structures and all the things you can imagine.
Okay, now you guys have got a booth just down the aisle from where we are. What brings you to ShopTalk?
What doesn't bring me to ShopTalk? This place is wild. I mean, there's thousands of people here. At this point, I've been coming to the show for years, so it's like, you know, coming back to see old friends at this point. But a lot of brands, a lot of retailers, a lot of partners. And so I spend a lot of my time here talking to new channel partners that are starting to emerge and really catch fire among our clients. And so we're structuring new go-to-market relationships and things that will help those same clients grow over the year to come.
Anything that you've seen here so far that's excited you?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, for us, there's always a focus on finding new programs that our partners and our clients can equally be excited about. And, you know, obviously we want to deliver excellent shopper experiences wherever they need to happen, but also we want to help our clients and our partners make money. And this is a great venue for helping people figure out what are those new things, what are those new programs that are going to help deliver those kinds of results in the year to come.
Now, you mentioned earlier about all the different channels that you support your clients with. You know, there are so many of them to choose from.
Yeah.
How do they focus and, you know, put their priorities together on those?
Yeah, honestly, that's part of our job, is to help those brands and retailers figure out where should they exist, where should they be performing. And oftentimes, there's some risk associated with that, where you do have to place bets on new channels. But ultimately, there are a few things that our clients are looking for. One is category alignment. You know, if you're a home goods client or brand, are you selling on a platform that maybe only sells auto parts? If so, probably not a good fit. That said, a lot of the work we're doing is figuring out, okay, where could you be selling? Where could that next audience you haven't yet uncovered actually be waiting for you? And so there's a lot of research and data analysis that goes into understanding where should those investments be made. Obviously, you have your standards, you know, your Googles and your Facebooks and your Amazons, but there's a whole slew of other surfaces that deserve attention. There's owned media too, right? Like how we're using text to engage or re-engage shoppers, how we're using email. And so a lot of our time is spent on threading together that channel strategy and making sure that clients are putting their best foot forward wherever they want to win.
I know it's sometimes difficult, but is there a brand that you're working with that you can give an example of how Feedonomics have helped them and maybe improved results?
Yeah, for sure. So New Balance is an amazing client of ours, doing really, really well across the channels that they've invested in. And you know, they use Feedonomics in the ways that we'd love them to, which is, you know, taking their product catalogs wherever they may reside, in those different systems, aggregating it and then transforming it for the services that they want to perform on, like a Google. What's interesting about different channels is that while you could at a high level just say, you know, all channels generally look the same, the reality is that under the hood, the way Google performs and succeeds for a brand is very different than how Facebook or TikTok might also perform and succeed. And it's my team's job to make sure that we're helping the brand and New Balance understand those differences and then win on those channels with that knowledge, you know, kind of under the hood.
Great. One last question for you. In terms of, I don't know if there's anything specific that you've seen here, but just in general, are there any particular trends that you're seeing within retail, maybe that, you know, for the next year, but possibly, I don't know if this is impossible to predict, but maybe for the next kind of like 24 months or beyond?
Absolutely. One of the most exciting things that I think I've spent most of my time here actually talking about is a category we're calling instant commerce.
Okay.
And so what instant commerce basically means is brands and retailers that have a marketplace presence, like they have a listing on an Amazon, let's say, can actually use the Amazon surface, so that the channel, to find shoppers, transact the order there, but then send that order for pickup or delivery from a local brick and mortar location. So imagine using Amazon as a search engine and fulfilling that order from a brick and mortar location, which means for the first time, you're going to have places like an Amazon or wherever sending traffic to your owned store location, which makes them your shopper when they come in the store. That enables a quicker fulfillment experience, that enables new loyalty opportunities. And so overall, if you're a big brand or retailer who's expanding and really trying to sell more of their inventory in their local storefront, this is an excellent way to drive more people through the front door.
And a great way to get people back out on the high street as well, I guess.
Exactly right. I mean, that's what brands and retailers need right now. It's, you know, not reinventing the wheel, just using the tools that they already have and positioning them in a way that's going to drive the most conversion and also deliver an incredible shopper experience, which is what all of us want to deliver anyway.
Excellent. Well, listen, thank you so much for sharing that insight. But for now, Matt Dornfield, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks once again to all our guests who joined us here on Bread Financial's booth at Shop Talk.
You can find us on all the usual social media platforms, and if you want to get in touch with the show, you can do that via the contact form on our website.
But for now, from me, Russell Goldsmith, and Graham Barrett, thanks for listening and watching, and goodbye.